Welcome to WHRO's Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. There's a great set of stories for you ahead of Memorial Day weekend. Armed Forces Brewing Company shuttered its doors in 2025 after controversial statements from its CEO. Now the brewery is back, and it's suing a string of critics for $50 million.
A national report says Virginia faces catastrophic shortages in community mental health. Providers in Norfolk say patients struggle to know where to go when facing a crisis.
And worms are essential to the ecosystem, and they're everywhere around us. A Norfolk nonprofit is showing folks how the critters are an essential part to a healthy garden. It's WHRO's Weekly Edition. The USS Gerald R. Ford returned home after breaking records for the longest deployment by a carrier since the Vietnam War. WHRO's Steve Walsh was there speaking to families awaiting their loved ones.
The families of roughly 3,500 sailors lined the pier at Naval Station Norfolk following a grueling mission that took the USS Ford carrier strike group from Europe to the coast of Venezuela and on to the Red Sea for Operation Epic Fury. Julissa De La Rosa waited for Omar Mora while holding their four-month-old son, who he hasn't seen.
We got close to the first homecoming. We were excited just to hear they got extended again and then again and again. It was emotional. It was frustrating because, you know, you just want them home. It was a tough deployment for everybody, for sure.
Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth presented the strike group with the Presidential Unit Citation. CNO Admiral Daryl Cottle says he would not like to see another carrier strike group break the Ford's record, given the stress on families. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
The controversial Armed Forces Brewing Company closed in 2025, blaming woke politics. But now WHRO's Toby Cox says the brewery is suing its critics in Norfolk for $50 million.
The military-themed brewery moved to Norfolk in 2023. Many of its neighbors criticized the company, its spokesman Robert O'Neill, and its CEO Alan Beale for statements about trans people and women. When the brewery closed its Norfolk headquarters last year, Beale blamed the, quote, local woke mob. The company filed a lawsuit this week against critics Andrew Copeland, Stacey Copeland, Butch Bracknell, Zach Roberts, and an unidentified Reddit user. The lawsuit alleges they teamed up to destroy the brewery's reputation and force the brewery to close its doors. It seeks $50 million in damages. Financial filings show the brewery has been struggling for years. Vendors sued the company for non-payment. Former employees also reported not getting paid. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
Hampton Roads schools have the highest teacher vacancy rate in the state. WHRO's Ashley White reports a bill signed by Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger could help address the issue.
Spanberger signed a bill Monday designed to help address the state's teacher shortage. The bill enters Virginia into the Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact. It allows teachers licensed in one state to apply for and obtain an equivalent license in another compact member state without submitting additional materials or taking additional coursework. The bill could help schools in the Hampton Roads area with their teacher shortage. The region has the highest teacher vacancy rate in the state, 4.63%, with about 800 open positions. The state's vacancy rate is about 2.5%. There are more than a dozen states in the Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact, including Kentucky, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. Ashley White, WHRO News.
The Iran war has stretched into its third month, and more than 50,000 U.S. troops remain in the Middle East. Meanwhile, military veterans at home are watching the situation with a mix of concern, skepticism, and caution. From Fairbanks, Alaska, Shelby Herbert reports for the American Homefront Project.
In 1979, Fairbanks Army veteran Daryl Frank packed his bags for a deployment to Iran that never came. He was part of the Division Ready Force at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. His unit was preparing to parachute into the Middle East during the Iran hostage crisis.
We had all our gear ready, and we got the call to go to the airport, and they took us into this area with barbed wire and armed guards walking around it so nobody would run away. And we were like, yeah, this is what we've been training for.
The orders got called off. The hostages eventually were released, but the crisis marked a new era of hostility between the U.S. and Iran's then-new theocratic government. Daryl Frank is now retired from the Army and is the president of the Alaska Native Veterans Association. As he sipped coffee at the River City Cafe in Fairbanks, he said today's service members are facing a much more advanced Iranian military.
All through the years, they've acquired these weapons and whatnot. They didn't have the missile technology back then, or guided missiles, or anything like that.
Frank says his thoughts lie with the service members deployed to the area. He hopes they come home safely, with their heads held high, and without what he calls a moral injury.
You go in there knowing that that's what you signed up for, but it's a hell of a lot better than staying here and fighting it on your homeland, which is eventually going to happen one of these days.
Alaska has the largest concentration of veterans in the country, and Alaska Natives have the highest rate of service among any demographic. But sometimes it's a complicated relationship with the United States government. Some Alaska Natives joined the military decades ago after growing up in boarding schools intended to forcibly assimilate them.
We as Alaska Native people are still dealing with that, still recovering from that.
Alaska Native Veterans Association member Hugh Walker served in the Navy in the 70s. He says getting separated from his family and culture as a kid informs his feelings about the Iran War and about President Trump.
I just think it's a racist war. Not only that, but, you know, with his immigration policy, mostly brown people. And that really affects me because I'm a product of the boarding home.
At a Fairbanks No Kings rally in March, veteran Scott Justison weaved through the crowd, dressed in his old army camouflage and a T-Rex mask, handing out copies of his zine, The American Regressive. He served from 2005 to 2012 and deployed to Iraq.
Well, I joined under the George W. Bush administration after we had already invaded Iraq. And I wanted to learn about the human side of the military. There's the tendency on one side to dehumanize the members of the military as though they're kind of beasts that want to go out and commit violence.
He opposes the war in Iran and knows it isn't popular with Americans. But he hopes people don't take it out on the troops.
Some of my friends are in there because they have family, they have debt. You're not going to just quit based on your values if you're entrenched in debt and stuff. And so they try to make the best of it in a day-to-day compromise, like we all do in one capacity or another.
Though President Trump has declared the Iran war over, thousands of U.S. troops who deployed to the region remain there. Justison says he fears the war in Iran could become another years-long Middle Eastern entanglement, just like the war he served in. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, May marks Norfolk's 15th annual Bike Month. The city is touting newly upgraded safety corridors. But first, Virginia Beach's Planning Commission wants the city to get ready for data centers. WHRO's John Doucette reports the city is following a similar path to communities in the Commonwealth and around the country.
The commission asked City Council to get more information about data centers and consider ways to provide oversight. The city doesn't have large centers like other communities in Virginia, but the use isn't specified in its zoning. In a letter this month, Commission Chairperson John Costin suggested requiring a conditional use permit. He says that could let the city weigh in.
We just thought it was worthy of having some constraints and some power to say no if no needs to be said.
Data centers are expected to be part of an eventual update to the city zoning ordinance following the recent adoption of a new comprehensive land use plan. John Doucette, WHRO News.
Dominion Energy on Monday announced plans to merge with a Florida-based energy company. WHRO's Catherine Hefner breaks down the deal.
Dominion and NextEra Energy say they would become the world's largest regulated electric utility business, worth $400 billion. It's an all-stock transaction. Dominion shareholders would receive more than $300 million in cash when the deal closes. NextEra shareholders would own three-quarters of the new company. Company officials say combining resources will allow them to invest in more projects to meet rising energy demand. Dominion customers are supposed to get bill credits totaling more than $2 billion across 2 years after the deal closes. It's unclear how much each customer will receive or how electric bills will be affected long-term. Catherine Hafner, Kramer, WHRO News.
The ink wasn't even dry on Virginia's new assault weapons ban before gun rights groups brought some legal challenges. WVTF's Michael Pope brings us more details on the state of the ban.
Advocates for gun rights say assault-style weapons are protected by the Second Amendment because they're in common use by law-abiding citizens for lawful purposes. That's the argument at the heart of state and federal lawsuits challenging Virginia's new assault weapons ban. Justin Davis is director of public affairs at the National Rifle Association, one of the groups filing the lawsuits.
They say that's based on AR-15s and quote-unquote assault rifles, but even those are as common as Ford F-150s in this country. There's tens of millions across the country. They're incredibly owned. They're actually the most popular sporting rifle in the country.
Bill Taylor is deputy director of Second Amendment litigation at Everytown Law, and he says the test is not about how many guns are out there. He says the plaintiffs need to show that assault-style weapons are in common use for self-defense.
These weapons are neither commonly used for self-defense purposes, nor are they suitable for self-defense purposes. They're designed for maximal lethality, not civilian self-defense. They're designed for the battlefield, not for Virginia streets and neighborhoods.
Depending on what happens with the legal challenges, the ban will go into effect on July 1st. The new law makes it a Class 1 misdemeanor to import, sell, manufacture, purchase, or transfer an assault-style weapon or large-capacity magazine. Michael Pope.
A week after Norfolk City Council stalled its 2027 infrastructure budget, city leaders approved an updated $352 million capital improvement plan. WHRO's Brian Saunders dives into the details.
Council passed the spending plan after Norfolk City Manager Patrick Roberts proposed allocating $1 million for an East Side Library and Recreation Center at the former Poplar Halls Elementary School site. It was a direct concession to weeks of public outcry over the city prioritizing downtown projects and neglecting promised efforts elsewhere. Equity for East Side Coalition Representative Kathy O'Hara says local organizing forced the change.
We have faith that they're listening, but also faith in the power of the people.
Community advocates say this is the first step, but they plan to keep pressing city leaders for a complete strategic roadmap. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
Fort Monroe is re-envisioning what its landscape can offer residents and visitors. But WHRO's Nick McNamara reports, before putting pen to paper, it's hosting a series of public meetings and online surveys.
At the Fort Monroe Authority's Thursday listening session, residents were open to several ways to create new experiences and elevate the landmark's history and ecology. For Mitchell Silver, who led the session, public engagement is what will make the design work for Fort Monroe.
It has a soul and an identity, and we need the public to tell us what that is. So when we do the plan, we get it right. And it's authentic and it's right for Fort Monroe.
Silver and Fort Monroe CEO Scott Martin see a gem that could reshape the region and state. Elevating the once Army post, though, will take a good landscape plan. That's why the authority chose internationally acclaimed firm Hargraves Jones to craft it. Fort Monroe expects a final draft by the end of the year. Residents still have time to weigh in via an online survey and more listening sessions through the end of June. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
A new national report ranks Virginia as facing catastrophic shortages in community mental health. Providers in Norfolk say many patients still struggle to know where to turn during a mental health crisis. WHRO's Yiching Wang reports.
Many residents still default to emergency rooms, even as the region expands services outside hospitals, including the 988 hotline that assesses patients' needs and connects them with mental health resources.
Well, if you break your arm or leg, where do you go to? And I mean, to go to the hospital. And I said, well, what happens if you break your mind? And they go, I don't, what? And you know, they don't really know.
That's Johnny Hunter from Kempsville Center for Behavioral Health. He says wait lists, transportation, and insurance coverage can delay care. The report also found Virginians go out of network for mental health care more than six times as often as for physical health care. Yiching Wang, WHRO News.
Dozens of electricians, all union workers who help build data centers across Virginia, attended a meeting of the Senate Finance Committee Tuesday. They were there to urge negotiators to keep tax breaks for data centers, a sticking point in the ongoing fight over Virginia's budget. WVTF's Brad Kuttner has this report.
In order to get those 2,500 jobs, you're talking about 40 additional data centers.
It could be.
With no way to provide the power, the water, and all the other infrastructure.
That's Senate President Louise Lucas during Tuesday's meeting of the Senate Finance Committee. The Firebrand Portsmouth area senator was speaking with Virginia Secretary of Finance, former Delegate Mark Sickles. Lucas wants to see data center tax breaks, which helped turn Virginia into an internet traffic hub, come to an end in order to fund billions in new state programs and plug holes made by President Donald Trump's federal spending cut. But out in the hallway after the meeting, union electricians, including Dorian Hargrave, who you'll hear first, confronted Senate Majority Leader Scott Saraville on the idea.
I'd like to have this economy boasted and stay like it is right here in Virginia.
Anything from you? Any response, immediate response?
No, I was just telling them, my grandfather was an electrician. He took a bunch of classes during the Great Depression, and it's what gave him a career. He ended up actually being the lead electrician on the Roanoke Star. If you all know the Star of Roanoke, a job supported my grandfather's entire life, his whole family, but two kids through college, and you know, I probably wouldn't be here if he hadn't.
Senate budget negotiators plan to meet again in late June. No word yet from negotiators in the House. The deadline to pass the budget is June 30th. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
May marks Norfolk's 15th annual Bike Month, and WHRO's Brian Saunders says newly upgraded safety corridors are reframing who can use cycling infrastructure in the city.
Norfolk is adding protected lanes, ADA accessibility, and flashing beacons at 5 crossings along Granby Street. The eventual goal is for continuous bike lanes to connect downtown to Ocean View. Liz Schlieper, president of Bike Norfolk, says the upgrades are a matter of basic equity.
There are individuals in our community without access to automobiles, so they depend on infrastructure.
City transportation engineer Keith Darrow says the ultimate goal is a shared culture shift.
We want people to recognize that we're all able to use the same lanes and the same roadways. We've all got to share it regardless of how you're taking a bus, vehicle, bikes.
The Granby Street addition should be done in about a month. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
James City County is pondering implementing a tax on certain event and entertainment tickets by July. A group of residents, however, think it will be bad for locals and the tourism industry. WHRO's Nick McNamara shares their concerns.
Resident Susan Fraun spoke during Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting. She urged the county to exhaust every other option before adding another tax.
The arts, athletics, and culture of this county are not luxuries to be taxed. They are the lifeblood of this community.
Another speaker presented a petition of more than 500 signatures from residents opposed to a ticket tax and a proposal to raise the meals tax by 2%. Staff presented the ticket tax as a way to cut into the county's growing capital project debt. The Board of Supervisors, though, wasn't ready to vote Tuesday. Several members said they wanted a tax, if approved, to focus on big venues and amusement parks such as Busch Gardens and to be set at a lower rate than the 10% maximum allowed by Virginia Code. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
A new Norfolk nonprofit shows people how worms can help them grow healthy gardens. WHRO's Toby Cox digs into the dirt to learn more.
Aaron Novotny with Community Farmers holds two handfuls of dirt. In one hand, the soil is a reddish brown with worms wriggling through it. In the other, the soil is such a deep, rich brown, it's almost black.
This is basically worm poop.
Novotny calls it black gold.
It's a really good fertilizer with a bunch of microbes in there.
Novotny leads the new nonprofit Community Farmers. He wants to teach people how to garden and plant community gardens around Norfolk. He says one of the biggest mistakes people make when gardening is ignoring the soil.
Nothing's going to grow in soil that's depleted of nutrients.
Novotny's worms are in a 5-gallon bucket with holes drilled in the bottom for drainage. He adds coconut fibers as the base for the worms to slither through. The worms can break down about a pound of fruit and vegetable scraps a week. Novotny says the black gold from the worms makes for healthy harvests. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
Scientists have been studying the movement of fish for decades. One team from the National Centers for Coastal Ocean Science is in the middle of a 3-year study of two of the Chesapeake Bay's iconic trophy fish, red drum and striped bass.
They're looking at how warming waters, extreme weather, and other factors affect the fish's movement in and out of the bay.
VPR's Pamela D'Angelo spent a morning with scientists as they collected data at the mouth of the bay.
Talking to it. The status, it says armed, so that means that it's still locked. We can go through and activate it. Click activate, and what that'll do is there's a lug nut on the bottom of the receiver, and once we send this activation signal, it'll turn and the lug will separate from the receiver itself.
Brianna Cahill is a marine ecologist working for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. She's monitoring a transponding hydrophone, which is an underwater microphone. It's talking to an acoustic receiver anchored to the bottom of the bay, some 30 feet below, that logs data from tagged fish. She's telling it to come to the surface for retrieval.
We're 65 meters away. It's opening. So maybe keep eyes out on the bow. Keep eyes out. We'll see two floats and usually a plume of sediment coming off of it. It's at the surface.
The device is about the size of a liter soda bottle. It's one of 30 deployed around the bay. They've been collecting data from nearly 250 striped bass and red drum tagged in 2024 and 2025. But tagging is not how it sounds. It's actually a surgically implanted transmitter about three quarters the size of a AA battery.
So we just do a small enough incision that we can get the tag in, and it only needs one stitch to close.
Bethany Williams is a research ecologist with NOAA's National Centers for Coastal Ocean Science. Each time a tag fish passes by an acoustic receiver, it pings and transmits data. As part of the Atlantic Cooperative Telemetry Network, they receive even more data on their fish through an exchange among other projects using similar receivers their fish might ping. And there are other collaboratives as well.
So that's part one, right? Tracking the fish and seeing where they go. And then we get all those locations back, and we get the temperature data and the depth data that they were recording in their internal tags at all those points. And then we take each of those points and we overlay them with environmental conditions.
Rapidly warming oceans, ocean acidification, marine heat waves, and extreme weather events are transforming marine ecosystems and potentially the behavior of these fish. This data will help fisheries managers determine how best to keep fish populations healthy and not overfished. Marine biologist Lachlan Seisloff holds the retrieved acoustic receiver.
You can see it's covered in different kinds of fouling organisms. Worms, sea squirts, sponges, oysters, algae. And here's the receiver itself, which is actually wrapped in pantyhose.
Yep, you heard it right. This high-tech equipment uses low-tech protection from the underwater elements.
Please explain why it's wrapped in pantyhose, Rocco. Pantyhose just works really well to protect against fouling. And I think the acoustic fish tracking field is keeping the pantyhose industry afloat.
The next acoustic receiver they retrieve doesn't have the technology to release itself, so Lachlan and Brianna will dive into the bay's chilly waters for it. In 6 months, they'll be back for another 5 days to do it all again. From the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay, I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition. We had help today from WHRO's Toby Cox, John Doucette, Catherine Hafner, Nick McNamara, Brian Saunders, Steve Walsh, Yiching Wang, and Ashley White.
Shelby Herbert with the American Homefront Project, WVTF's Michael Pope, and VPR's Pamela D'Angelo. Also, Connor Worley, who produced today's show.
A reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed.
You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed. For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.